Hey, do you enjoy this podcast? Me too. And I bet you'd like this show to keep going. Same. Guess what? You can help that happen while also getting great rewards. Just go to buymeacoffee.com/memoriam. That's M-E-M-O-R-I-A-M, memoriam. And you can donate money to help us keep these shows on the air. You can give us a one-time donation as small as $3, or you can become a Memoriam member and earn great rewards. What rewards, you ask? Well, besides the fact that you'd be helping us, which is a great reward in and of itself, you'd also have access to our full back catalog of all of our podcasts. You'd get preferential seating at any live events that you are attending. That's great. You'd be guaranteed to meet the cast at live events. Plus, you'll get members-only emails that contain lots of behind-the-scenes information about all things Memoriam, including stuff about this show you're listening to right now. So how about you go to buymeacoffee.com/memoriam and help a podcast out. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Memoriam Incubator. It's me, Nick Mataragas, and this week we're going to continue our series of interviews with members of Memoriam. This one also took place at C2E2 this year, you know, before everything got shut down. And it's a visit with Rebecca Rivers, who has been a part of Memoriam for quite a while now. She's performed in multiple sketch shows for us. She's been on Freak of the Week, Unfucking Relatable, Mr. Wiggly's Most Unhappy Friendship Garden, and, you know, has been a great supporter and member of the group for a good time now. And so it was nice to get to know her background a little bit more. So I hope you enjoy.
Hey everyone, it's Nick Mataragas again, you know, me from Memoriam. We're continuing our interviews of other Memoriam members. You don't get to hear about me because I'm the one doing the talking, which is not fair, I guess.
But it is
whatever.
Not fair.
I'm not that interesting.
Oh, we'll have to turn the tables.
At some point, maybe. But I'm with Rebecca Rivers today.
Hi.
Rebecca, you do a lot with us. You do... you've been on Mr. Wiggly.
Yes.
Freak of the Week.
Yes.
Unfucking Relatable.
Yes.
You've been on a bunch of our stage shows.
Yes, I've been on Bob After Dark.
Bob After Dark.
Yeah.
Can't forget that. Am I missing anything else?
No, I think that's it. I don't know that we do anything else.
I don't know. We do so much I can't keep track anymore.
Well, I don't do the improv very much, other than in Freak.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. That's true. Sorry, my brain stopped for a second.
That's okay.
I'm just, you know, here to get to know you. Actually, you might be, other than, I think, Bob, the person I know, like, the least about in the group.
Yeah.
I don't know if you agree with that, but
I would say
true.
That's probably true.
Yeah. So, I know you live in Geneva now. Are you originally from Geneva?
I am.
So, Geneva, Illinois.
Yes.
Which is a big Christmas town, according to Patrick Harrington.
That's what he notices. Yes, we do have a big Christmas celebration. No, it's a small suburb of Chicago.
Okay.
I lived there growing up, and then as soon as I turned 18, I moved to the city.
Okay.
To Chicago, and went to school at DePaul for business, and I stayed in the city for the next 12 years, something like that, maybe more, I can't remember.
Okay.
Then I worked in human resources, we're talking office space, horrible, like, cubicle life. I was a trainer for a while in there, too, so I did get to travel, so that was nice. But.
See, I didn't know that, because I know that you taught English for a while, so this is before that, even.
This is before, I'm old, yeah.
Fair enough.
There's been a lot of years in there to do stuff, and I tend to get bored.
Sure. So. No, I get that. I totally get that.
Yeah, so I was, I was working in business and in human resources, and then I, you know, didn't like that, so I went back to school to teach Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, when I graduated, it was 2008 when no one was hiring teachers, especially anyone with a master's degree.
Yeah.
With no experience.
No.
In the Chicago area, where it's hard to find teaching jobs anyways.
Did your master's in DePaul as well?
I did. Okay. I was lazy.
That's okay. A lot of people do that. A lot of people go to the same school for their master's.
Well, I will tell you this. I went back for a second master's in English. So my first master's was in teaching English.
Okay.
But then I ended up teaching at community college because I couldn't find a high school job. Liked it much better. But in order to teach English at a community college, I needed more credit hours.
Okay.
For English. I went to Northern Illinois University, because I thought, finally, I'm going to go to a different school. And it was weird. It was like buying a car. They wanted to upsell me on the PhD. It was like they didn't want to take any of my credit hours. They didn't want, they were geez. Like so, it was just really not a pleasant conversation. So I just went back to DePaul because I.
That's fair.
I mean, it's expensive school, but I ended up not having to have as many classes, so it worked out. And then I did that for a long time, and now I work full time as a career counselor because I got bored of the teaching.
That's fair. So what's the next step after career counselor then?
That's what I'm trying to figure out, because you know, I've been doing it for a year and a half.
Right.
I like it a lot. It's a position where I get to do a lot of different things, and as I mentioned, I get bored very easily.
Right.
So I like having a job where I get to, you know, do graphic design work to create things for events. I get to plan the events, but I also still get to go into classrooms and present to students. I also get to meet one-on-one with people of all ages and backgrounds. So my day is never the same.
That's cool. That's really cool. So, why, like, I'm taking a step back a little bit.
Please
but like,
do, because there's a big story. It's a lot of information.
But, like, why did you choose to go into English after business?
Because I felt like I could do that.
So it wasn't like the English language was calling to you
right,
or anything?
Right, and this is where, this is something I realized. Because I love reading. I mean, I'm definitely, you know, that's a passion. But I don't really like writing.
Okay.
I mean, I've learned to appreciate it, and I've learned to feel satisfied when I do it well or in a way that I like. But I'm not somebody that goes home and is like, I'm going to write, you know, to get rid of my, you know, to write my anxiety away. Like, that's not me.
Sure.
But I like teaching. So for me, it was, well, what can I teach that I will at least enjoy for the most part? And, you know, and I do, you know, like English. And then I learned that I actually was a writer. You know, I didn't think I was before I went to grad school.
Sure.
And I read this man, William Zinsser, and he passed away a few years ago. He, you know, talked about how writing doesn't have to be fiction.
Right.
Writing can be so many different things, and there is a process to it. And no one writes a sentence perfect. You know, a lot of people think they're born... Like, well, I can't write because I it doesn't come naturally to me, so therefore I'm not a writer. But it doesn't really work that way. You know, writing is hard. Writing takes time. You write a sentence and then you scratch it out and then you write it again. And you do that 50 million times and then you end up going, nope, this isn't working at all. And you get rid of all of it and you start over again.
Yeah.
And that doesn't, because that happens, that's a good thing. Like, that doesn't mean that you aren't a writer. So I guess, like, it was just a big moment for me to kind of accept that I could think of myself as a writer, think of myself as someone who could teach writing.
Right.
Even if I'm not someone that, you know, loves to write fiction.
That's interesting, because it's like, Pat and I's conversation, we talked about realizing that, like, the imperfections are what make things worthwhile. Like, and so it's kind of that same idea with writing. Like, you know, we all have our flaws in our writing, but that brings out our personality as well within those words.
Right.
And so it's interesting because, I mean, you know, I'm a writer. You know I'm a writer.
Yes,
like,
you are.
I write mostly dialogue, so it's a little bit different. But
yeah, it's great for theater.
But yeah, it's that embracing of those flaws, and then also talk about rewriting, so important.
So important.
And that's something that, like, a lot of people that were like, I'm going to be a writer, And they're like, why doesn't anybody read my stuff? I'm like, well, you've written a first draft.
Exactly. You know? Exactly. Yeah. And I think for me, well, I guess another impetus for it was working in HR. I had two interns that came to work for us from DePaul that were seniors and could not write an email. You know, couldn't write anything. And I thought, this is not okay. Like, I need to, maybe I could make a difference if I went back and became a teacher to try to help students. So one of my favorite things to teach is professional writing.
Okay.
I'm like the really boring writing, like technical writing. Like, give me an instruction manual and let's get into it. Yes.
That sounds awful to me. I can't do that kind of stuff. I'd be like, shoot me now.
I wouldn't want to do that full time, but teaching how to do that and kind of going over the concepts of that is something interesting. Technical writing is actually a very good field if someone's interested in writing for a living. It's actually a good way to make a living.
Well, it's a big field.
It is.
Yeah. I couldn't do it. I would.
No, I couldn't do it full time.
I would lose my mind. Yeah. Well, that's cool. So you go into teaching, you come in, now you're doing career counseling.
Yes.
You're also, you have your own podcast. You and Pat have two podcasts together.
Yes.
Ghostly and The Walking Dead podcast.
Yes.
So how did you and Pat come to the idea of doing Ghostly?
So it's interesting because meeting him has changed my life in obviously a lot of ways, but one of the biggest ways was this idea of being able to create art in a way of being in shows with you guys. You know, before we did Ghostly, I think I did some of the Memoriam shows.
We did one of our sketch shows.
We did, I did Dirty and Dirty, the second one, and then there was another one in there too. And
did you do Participation Trophy?
I did Participation Trophy at Elgin Fringe.
At Elgin Fringe.
So that's why it's a little
That was right before Ghostly.
That was right before Ghostly, So just that alone was terrifying for me. I'd always wanted to do something like that, but never thought in a million years that I could or would or knew there would be an outlet for that there are people that do that.
Right.
You know, that isn't just going to Hollywood or being like a big famous actor in Chicago or something
that. Yeah, that's the thing that people don't understand, especially with acting, is like it's a ton of people doing it and there's like three people making money on it.
Right, exactly, There's a lot of opportunities for it. And so that was amazing. I mean, I loved it. But right when we met, we talked about the fact that we both like podcasts. And had it in our minds that podcasting would be an interesting thing to do. Like, we both wanted to do a podcast, but had no concept. It wasn't like we had an idea. And I've always thought, I don't want to do a podcast unless it's something that I have something to say. Like, I don't want to do a podcast just to do a podcast.
Sure.
And so then he came home one day and was like, I know what we're going to do. We're going to do a podcast called Ghostly. So it wasn't my idea. Like, I wish I could claim credit for it. But I supported it, and I hope I've had some say in how it's developed over the last year and a half.
I think so. And you do a little bit of writing in that in every episode.
I do. I was going to say, so actually I have started to do some fictionalist kind of writing that I've never done before, which has been really interesting.
Right. It's like historically inspired ghost stories.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And that's been really fun. I have to kind of control myself a little bit because sometimes I want to go further with it. And it's like, we only have so much time.
You could almost do, like, extra ones just as, like bonus episodes.
Well, maybe with Patreon we'll do that someday,
There you go.
It's been super fun to do that. I love research. I love writing. I love being able to share all of that. So it's kind of been a perfect combination of it.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great. And Ghostly's been doing very well for itself. I mean, you guys have had good numbers. Like, I've seen your guys' numbers. You have pretty good numbers.
Yeah.
You know, you have a pretty, you know, good sized fan following, not just like download numbers, but like people that are really into your show.
We have some stands, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you guys are doing a meetup here at CTE, too.
Yeah. I don't know how many of our fans will be there, but that's
I think you'll have a few.
We'll have a few.
And on the show, obviously, Pat is. Pat is the skeptic.
Yes.
And you're the believer.
Yes.
What is it like being the believer next to a skeptic in that kind of
stuff? It can be frustrating sometimes, I will say. Because you know, part of it, I think it's frustrating, for, I'm sure, for, on both sides. So that's sure. that's true. Because the idea of our show is that we don't come to an answer. We give our opinions, and then it's obviously up to the listener to decide if they, who they believe.
Right.
So it's really kind of us pitching ourselves, but we, you know, certainly have a dialogue. And because, but because the idea isn't to come to a consensus,
right.
There's no incentive to compromise. So the idea is really, it's like, I'm going to say my thing and he's going to say his thing and we're just going to keep doing that.
Right.
And it's never, we're not going to be like, oh, well, you know what? That's a really good point. I mean, we do that sometimes.
Sure.
But for the most part, the idea is to kind of try to represent your side.
Right. Because you're pitching your argument to the listener, not to the other.
Exactly.
Host.
Exactly. It's right. kind of like being in a court case or something.
Yeah.
When the listener is the jury.
The jury, yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
So I think both of us probably play up our roles a little bit more
sure.
than we really have. But we also instituted doing, that's when we instituted doing the ratings.
The numbers.
The numbers.
I like because, the numbers, yeah.
Yeah, because it is, it's, it, like, there's times where maybe I, yeah, I believe it, but, like, not, like, real high, you know, or
it's interesting because your numbers, like, that stays fairly low no matter
he
what.
Does, yeah.
You kind of drop sometimes.
It, yeah.
Have you found, like, now that you've been doing the show for about a year now, mm-hmm. has your level of belief dropped at all, or is it about the same?
I think it's probably the same.
Okay.
I mean, I'm, you know, I think a good believer should be a skeptic. You know, you shouldn't just believe to believe.
Fair enough.
So if you really, truly, it doesn't mean anything if you just accept everything at face value. Mm-hmm. So for me, I think my belief is not, because I haven't had any, I shouldn't say that. I've had experiences more tangentially, like
sure.
with other people, as opposed to myself really having some big, strong thing that's happened to me.
Sure.
So it's definitely a faith, not as in religion, but just like a faith in that.
In other stories.
Other idea.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's also really, truly just me, myself, and my personality is that, like, the only thing I know as I get older is that I don't know anything.
It's a good thing to learn. You know, it's a very good thing to learn.
You know, I get dumber as I get older because the more I live, the more, you know, there's so many times in life when you know, someone wants to do something with their life and you're like, well, that's the dumbest idea I've ever heard. They're gonna fail. That's gonna be stupid, whatever. And then it goes great or they're fine. You know, so again, I don't give advice to people. And if someone tells me something, it's like, who am I to say that that didn't happen to you? Like,
sure.
And it certainly, I don't know how the universe works. So I'm open to what other things might be out there.
So generally, and I listen to the show, so I know this, but like mm-hmm. generally, you guys put a poll every week.
Yes.
Or every episode, I should say.
Yes.
On whether the audience believes or not in what you were talking about.
Yes.
Generally, the believers win.
Yes.
Do you think, and this is, you know, just putting this out there, do you think that because your show is about paranormal things,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, the majority of your listeners are going to be believers?
Right. And that's why it does surprise me that sometimes...
Sometimes, yeah.
I don't win.
The hotel one in Nevada or whatever
it was.
Yeah,
yeah, I think that one, with the clown motel.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Everybody was like, no, that one's
no.
not real.
And I think that's good.
Yeah.
So here's my secret academic reason for ghostly.
Okay.
Is, you know, this country, we are, in the world really, we don't debate well. We're
that's
very
true.
Divided. And it's very much a us versus them. And it's did we talk past each other? And it's really, really hard. And so part of, for me, purpose of ghostly is to give an example of how that can be done in a positive way.
Right.
You know, that you could have a discussion with somebody that you do not agree, you're not going to change the other person's mind, but that doesn't mean we can't have a discussion and all learn something from that.
Sure.
So that's my kind of super secret way. And how I know it works a little bit is that we have listeners that are like, man, if they were talking about politics or anything else, they would probably hate each other, but because yeah. they're in this realm of ghostly, they can have a conversation.
It's interesting. So, you mentioned faith earlier, and you mentioned, and I haven't talked to Pat.
Mm-hmm.
He's he's basically a Buddhist atheist.
Right.
So do your beliefs run similar to his, or are they different?
I was raised Lutheran.
Okay.
That's my answer to that usually, is like, I was raised Lutheran.
That's totally makes sense. Yeah.
I spent a lot of time at church, interestingly enough. But my time at church was more social as opposed to truly, like,
spiritually
understanding things. But I find it interesting that in times of stress, I fall back on it a bit in my mind, which is surprising. Yeah. Like, I, you know, where my mind will go there. That doesn't necessarily, I'm a skeptic, not necessarily like a non-believer, right. But I'm not really a believer. Like, I definitely kind of fall in the, like, there's a part of my mind that's like, that's how you were indoctrinated, but then it was such a part of my upbringing that it's hard to separate it.
Sure, sure. Yeah. I get that. That makes sense. Yeah. So you talked about, like, getting a chance to like, perform and stuff. Ooh. Is that something you want to do more of, or?
It is. It's just been hard.
Sure.
To be honest, with Ghostly.
Yeah.
And work.
Right.
Because that, you know, working full-time now and then and doing two podcasts, it's been more difficult to do that, but that is something I'd like to do. I always want to do classes potentially, or something where I actually have some sort of
structure to build off of.
Yeah, because I feel like right now it's just me just trying stuff and
getting thrown in the deep
end.
I
have no idea if I can do it at all.
Sure. No, yeah. I get that, and that makes sense. And it's interesting because, like, I've had conversations with other members of Memoriam where I'm like, you know, I always encourage people, because one of the things that I first set up with Memorial was like, hey, you can do stuff here, and you can do stuff everywhere. You don't have, like, because, like, Pat and I came from a place where it was like, if you're doing stuff somewhere else, that's an issue.
Which is just crazy.
It is crazy. But, like, I say that, and then, like, most of, like, out of everyone that's involved in Memorial, I think I still do the most things outside of Memorial.
Yes, I think that's
which
true.
Which is such a weird thing to think about.
It is.
But, yeah, I'm always wanting in. So that's cool that you know, maybe want to take classes or do some other stuff.
Well, and I will say, Memoriam has been really great for me. I feel like it's a place that's actually given someone with no background an opportunity to do things, and that is not something that is always available.
Yeah.
We have a large social circle of people, right, that have been, that we know, and Memoriam is the only group that has ever asked me to do anything, given me the opportunity to do anything. So that means a lot.
I appreciate that.
I like other people. They're really nice. But you know what? They're not the ones giving me opportunities.
Sure. No, I get that. I totally get that.
Yeah.
That's... God, I'm terrible at taking compliments, so I apologize for the awkwardness there. I don't do it well at all. Something you'll if you didn't know about me, you'll know more as you get to know me more, because I don't take that well, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Very cool. So I asked Pat this question because I think it's a good question to wrap up with. Like, we're all podcasters here, so, like, is there a podcast right now that you're really into?
Yes. Of course, do I remember the name of it at this exact moment? No, because I just started listening to it. Wait. I'm going to find out. But no, it's this one, Most Notorious. I don't know why.
Most Notorious.
That. Most Notorious is a true crime podcast. He interviews authors.
Oh, cool.
So it's mostly the authors talking, but they're all old crimes. So it's academics who research, like, this 18-something, crime from the 1800s, or, you know, this pirate that, like, did something, or it could be something from the 20th century, too, but it's usually something older.
Sure.
And it's somebody that went back and did the research, looked at the original source material, that kind of stuff, and so it's because there's so many crime podcasts. I mean, I love Crime Junkies and all that.
Sure.
But this is so interesting to hear about this, like, murder that happened in New York, you know, back in the, you know, when it was not even, you know, the United States yet or something. I mean, it was just, it's really old stuff. It's cool.
That's pretty cool. That's actually really cool. I might have checked that one out.
Yeah, my brother turned me onto it, so.
That's neat. That's really cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Rebecca, for you know, taking the time to do this.
Sure, thanks. Sorry for my long history of my background.
Oh, don't worry. It was good. It was good. Thanks.
Thanks.
Memoriam Development.
Hey, true believers and new believers, this is Dr. David Hickney. I am a PhD in cryptozoology from MIT, and I'm the host of Freak of the Week. What's Freak of the Week? It's a podcast where people can call in to talk about all the crazy creatures and phenomena that are out there. Join me, my co-host, Dr. Elizabeth Marin, who may or may not be my sister. Spoiler, she is my sister, as we discuss such amazing topics like the ghost of Dave Coulier, the lost city of Miami, aliens, feline warriors, and much, much more. Freak of the Week comes out every week, hence the name, on Fridays. See you then.